Hello, welcome to This Week in the Atlantic Coast Conference, the podcast for allsportsdiscussion.com. This is Jeff, one of your co-hosts. You can follow me on Twitter at Talkin' ACC Sports. The podcast moderator is Matthew, and you can follow him at HokieSmash_ASD. With that said, I'm going to turn it over to Matthew to get a word from us.
All right. Welcome to This Week in the Atlantic Coast Conference. This is the podcast for allsportsdiscussion.com. You can follow me on Twitter at @HokieSmash_ASD. Joining me, as always, is Jeff. You can follow him on Twitter at @TalkingACCSports. And we are sponsored by Main Street Pharmacy in Blacksburg, Virginia. They are at 301 South Main Street. That's Suite 107, Blacksburg, Virginia, 24060. Again, that's Main Street Pharmacy in Blacksburg, Virginia. They are at 301 South Main Street. That's Suite 107, Blacksburg, Virginia, 24060. You can follow Main Street Pharmacy on Twitter at Main Street Farm. That's at MainStreetPharm. And this week, we have a great return guest on the show in Hunker Down Hokie. It's Dan, and he runs the 2-Minute Drill Field podcast. You'll mostly hear Hokies football on that podcast, but you're also going to hear some Hokie hoops too. Dan is a great return guest. As I've said, he's been on this podcast several times, and this is his third time on the show with us. Dan, we are really happy to have you back. I know I ran through this your bio real quickly here. Just tell us a little bit about yourself and anything else that you want to plug, man. The floor is yours. You there, Dan? Hey, Dan, you there?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now. We can hear you now, man. Okay. The floor is yours, man. I mean, I was giving an introduction to our listeners to you about yourself, and I was just saying that you run the 2-Minute Drill podcast, which is mostly Hokies football on that podcast, but you're also going to hear, you know, some Hokies hoops here and there too. And I mentioned to our listeners, man, you're just a great return guest. This is your third time on the show with us. Tell us anything you want about yourself. And we got a lot of listeners coming on here all the time. Dan, the floor is yours.
Hey, thanks, Matthew. Appreciate it. Appreciate the chance to come on and invent a little bit. It is cathartic. About myself, I am, as you said, run the 2-Minute Drill Field podcast, which I have left dormant for the last basically 10 months, in part because I was tired of essentially putting together content that was negative and depressing. And so I, the last episode I actually did was 24 hours before Whit Babcock's famous press conference where he announced as if he was at gunpoint that Justin Fuente would be back for the 2021 season. And so after that, I guess I've gone through the 5 stages of grief and sort of came to acceptance. And it's been a long time coming, but I won't belabor it, but I did start the podcast. There's an awful lot of great Virginia Tech content out there, as there is for I think most schools, but it's nice to be kind of an independent voice. We don't need access to the program, and you can vent. I'm not there to bash the program at all, but I think have kind of a straight conversation about the direction of things, and that was the reason I started it in 2018, and it's been very enjoyable.
Well, we appreciate you joining us, man. So we're going to go through a real quick lightning round here, man, because later in this podcast, we're going to have a ton of open microphone types of situations. Here we go. Which ACC football team was the most disappointing team in Week 8, and which ACC football team was the most impressive in Week 8?
I would have to say Clemson, most disappointing. If I was a gambling man, I was ready to lay quite a bit of money on them, that they just simply wouldn't after a bye week and all the disappointing performances earlier in the year, that they wouldn't lay an egg against Pitt. But that's exactly what they did, and I'm not really sure what's going on there. Offensive line, clearly. Uyagalele is not going to be the guy, but I thought that they were just going to out-athlete Pitt, and didn't happen. So problems down in Clemson. I'd say most impressive, that one's, you know, there were some impressive performances, but I have to say UVA and Wake Forest is probably the other candidate, throwing up 70 points, and I'm not sure if they punted the whole game. But UVA continues to impress me. I'm a Virginia Tech fan, but their offense is something else. And if you've watched it, it's pretty fun to watch. It's unique. Brennan Armstrong is incredible. You'd be my pick for ACC Player of the Year, frankly, probably over Kenny Pickett. And I know that's not the conventional choice right now, but he's averaging over 400 yards per game passing. And they're just one hard offense to stop. So they're a team to watch here down the stretch.
Thank you so much. Cheer up, Jeff.
All right. Thank you, Matthew. Dan, which ACC football game are you looking forward to the most in Week 9?
I would say UNC Notre Dame. I think that's one that everybody probably circled in August as a big one with national implications. It doesn't have that anymore at this point, but I'm really interested to see if Mack Brown can right the ship, also coming off of the bye week. My guess is, I don't care for UNC. I'm going to be rooting against them, but my guess is actually that they will. If you look at their schedule, it's really interesting. They're sitting at, I think, 3-3 or 4-3. I think they're 3-3. They still play, in addition to Notre Dame, they play Wake, Pitt, and NC State. And so things could really go south fast. Those are four ranked teams that they play down the stretch. So I'm going to be watching that for kind of a sign to see what direction the back half of UNC's season goes.
All right, Dan. Which ACC team could be on upset alert in Week 9 if they're looking ahead to the game on their schedule or otherwise just sleepwalking on the field?
I think it's Pitt. They've had two big wins in a row. They stomped Virginia Tech, and then really nice win over Clemson this past weekend. And they got Miami coming into town in Pittsburgh. And I've been watching Miami. I don't know if you guys have thoughts on this, but they've been improving every week. I'm rooting for them, by the way, because I want Manny Diaz to keep his job. I don't want that job to be open and Virginia Tech to have to compete with them. But, you know, Derek King, the QB, got injured, and this Tyler Van Dyke came in, and he was a little shaky the first couple of games. He really played well against NC State and delivered the win. And so I'm actually calling for Miami to upset Pitt next week.
All right. Good call there, Dan. Let's step out of the ACC for a bit here. Which national FBS game are you looking forward to the most this week? And we're wide open with this question. Give us your winner of this game or two that you're looking at. And I know there's a couple Big Ten games this week. And also, you know, a good out-of-conference game in the ACC for, you know, Virginia against BYU that I'm very intrigued by. Bronco Mendenhall heading back to Provo.
Yeah, that's an interesting one for sure. And you're right, there's the two Big Ten games, and then there's Georgia-Florida. I think those are probably the top four. The one I would choose, and it's nice to pick a Big Ten game where it's not Penn State-Ohio State, and that's you know, the battle of the undefeateds there, Michigan-Michigan State. I think both of them have had pretty easy schedules for the most part. I think Michigan State's best win is Miami, and we know Miami's not a very good team. Michigan's best win is probably Wisconsin. So they've had some cupcakes along the way, but you got two undefeateds, in-state rivals, That's a nooner. And now my sense on that one, I haven't watched a whole lot of both teams, but that Michigan's probably a little bit stronger and going to win that. Although Michigan State has, pretty strong running game. And I guess I feel a little bit of, I think of Michigan State in some ways as almost a sister school to Virginia Tech, in the sense that the football program is not unlike our football program in terms of it can occasionally get up in the top 10 and make some noise and get some national attention. And so for me, it sort of gives me hope that they're doing well, that, hey, maybe it only takes 2 or 3 years and all of a sudden we could find ourselves in a similar situation.
All right, Matthew, I'm going to turn it over to you for our last couple questions of the podcast.
All right, Dan, the time you're coming for, man. This is why you're here tonight. Open microphone time on the state of Virginia Tech football. The floor is yours.
How much time do I have? I could do a whole 2 minute drill field episode, but I will not. Look, first thing you say when you talk about the state of Virginia Tech football is basketball season starts in, I think, 10 days, November, well, a little bit more than 10 days. November 12th is the first game. So there is a little light at the end of the tunnel. And December 15th is an important date. I think you guys know. That is 52 days away, and that is the day that Justin Fuente's buyout drops from $10 million to $7.5 million. I think we were talking on Twitter with one or both of you over, right now we are at the question of when, not if. And I'm actually, by the way, in the camp that we should let him finish the season and spend that $2.5 million on something else. I was obviously very vocal. In fact, I did an entire podcast last year on the financial case for firing Fuente in 2020. Obviously fell very flat, but part of the argument is that, you're going to lose more than $2.5 million in ticket sales and that sort of thing over time if you didn't fire him in 2020. And I think you look at these empty stands, and fortunately there's not really any more home games. There's only one more home game this year. It's sort of played out the way that we feared the worst. But look, we've known what we have in Fuente for a long time. I don't want to rehash it, but I don't even really want to talk about him after he's gone, but we were sold that he was an offensive wizard. It's very, very clear in year six that he's not. Obviously a very poor recruiter, hasn't been able to develop players. In fact, many of the quarterbacks and other skill position players, we've seen them regress. We have drama surrounding the program. We shut down fan engagement. He's aloof, very stubborn, lots of problems over and over and over. And then there's the in-game coaching decisions, right, which we can all rattle off countless games where there's been all sorts of problems in-game coaching. And in a way, I respect him that he's kept Brad Cornelson around as his offensive coordinator through basically 4 years of very, very poor performance. So he's a loyal head coach. A lot of head coaches would at least mix things up along the way. But the good news is, look, it's coming to an end. And so, Witt made a bad mistake last year. It's water under the bridge. Let's move forward. You got to hire ahead of you. And that's where my energy is focused for the next really 2-3 months is, boy, let's get the hire right. I'm watching very closely all the other coaches on the hot seat because I want as few other open jobs as possible. That's why I'm rooting for Miami and Manny Diaz. I know there's going to be some jobs open on the West, Colorado, Nebraska, Washington probably open, but really not a lot right now. Jim Harbaugh is going to save his job. We're looking at these candidates. I think we're in a decent spot and really, frankly, excited to finally turn this thing around. It's going to take a few years. We only have one place to go from here, and that's up. And so that's, to me, we're going to be getting through this pain here, and that's good, good on us. And I'm excited to see, look, Virginia Tech is a place where you can win football games, I think. You're in the ACC Coastal. And it's got a great fan base. The facilities are starting to catch up. I think we can recruit there and get back maybe close, maybe not exactly where we were, as always sort of in the top 15 conversation, but I think close to that status over the long term. So I'm excited.
Keep going. I want to hear more here, Dan.
Well, I don't know. We want to talk about coaches. We want to talk about what went wrong.
Yes. Yes, all of them.
Yeah, I mean, I hate going back through the how did we sort of get here? You know, the one thing that does stick in my mind is you know, we have a fan base that's patient. If you and in some ways that's good, right? Every fan base is different. Most fan bases, especially when you get into Blue Bloods and in other places, boy, 3 years, you're looking, you better really be showing something in 3 years or we're going to pull the cord. It's not the way it is at Virginia Tech. And in fact, when many of us felt like we could see the writing on the wall back 2018, 2019, you know, a lot of fans say, you're not a good fan. If you're negative on Fuente at this point, give him a chance. And we've gone through the excuse, you know, machine over and over and over that he's come up with from injuries to youth on the team to bad apples to, you know, QB problems, et cetera, to I can't, you know, I'm going to go talk to Baylor because our facilities aren't any good and they're just not supporting me. Meanwhile, there's Dave Clawson down there with no money and no facilities, you know, putting Wake to a bowl game and punching way above their weight class. So I really got tired of the excuses. And I do think, you know, look, we, in some sense, the fan base is, you know, they should be kind of proud that they sort of stick with the team no matter what. But it also sends, I think, the wrong message to the athletic director. Athletic directors need pressure on them in order to make these changes. And I think we all saw the writing on the wall a long time ago, but there was enough sort of openness to keeping him another couple of years. And that's the situation we're in. It's just going to end up meaning that instead of being back in 2021, 2022, it's going to take a couple more years. I think the good news is, it's easier to do a rebuild nowadays with the transfer portal. You know, I think Virginia Tech's quarterback in 2022 is going to be someone who's not currently on the roster. You know, Spencer Rattler's probably going to USC or Ole Miss, but there's going to be some good quarterbacks, very capable, Power 5 starting quarterbacks that are not going to win the job in the spring, and they're going to go elsewhere, and they're going to come to Virginia Tech start. So you can have, frankly, an upgraded quarterback. The rest of the roster is not terribly talented, but you can bring in some folks. So I'm not saying we're going to be good next year, but I think you can build fairly quickly, pull kids in and recruit and, you know, kind of have a two to three year turnaround if you get the hire right. And then you can talk about all these guys. You know, Billy Napier, I think, is my personal favorite right now. I'm going to do some more research. Tom Herman is probably one A and one B. Matthew, I know you mentioned Hugh Freeze, and you got, I think, a poll going on Hugh Freeze.
I got a poll going on.
It was about 50-50, right?
Yeah, I'd say it's about 60-40, Dan, but I got a poll out there just to get the temperature on what people are thinking.
Was that 60-40 in favor or opposed?
Opposed.
Okay. I he's not my number one for sure, but he's a good coach, and we're kind of desperate. You know, I know a couple of other guys I don't want. I don't want Bill O'Brien is starting to get a lot of attention, the Alabama offensive coordinator, and I think he's my friends who are Penn State fans tell me that we don't want him. He's kind of a little unpredictable and erratic and things like that. So we need a steady hand. But look, I mean, almost anyone we're going to get is going to be just such an upgrade at all these key elements, fan engagement, player development, recruiting, in-game coaching. There's just going to be a lot to be excited about with these. I mean, Billy Napier is a guy who, in my opinion, has it all. Now, we'll see. I think he wants to be an SEC head coach. So the one negative on him for Virginia Tech is he might see it as a stepping stone job and could be a short timer. If he turns things around in 3 years and then he bolts for the SEC, that'd be a little bit of a problem. But guess what? If he's getting a job, you know, down at the SEC, that meant he did a good job here and then will at least be moving on to the next coach, you know, from a good spot as opposed to a position of weakness. So, I'm not envious of what Whit Babcock, athletic director, has to do over the next few weeks. But I do think there's quite a few potential really strong candidates out there. Brent Venables is another one I'm interested in, the Clemson defensive coordinator, and whether or not he's ready to go ahead and become a head coach somewhere. I don't know that he wants to go the Bud Foster route and just be a coordinator for 30 years.
So I'm going to follow up with you because there are a few Hokies out there that are saying, let's bring in the head coach from Cincinnati. Let's bring in Luke Fickell. And I think that's highly unrealistic because I think he's going to have his pick of jobs. And quite frankly, Dan, he's waiting for a top job to open for himself in the Midwest. I'm just curious in what your thoughts are.
I think that's right. Yeah, I mean, he's going to be the guy. I mean, he's probably a candidate at USC, right? And maybe LSU. He's probably the most sought after guy this offseason. And he's a guy between him and Tony Elliott, those are the two I was kind of really interested in having Virginia Tech hire last year. So I think he's probably unrealistic. There's some interesting things there, and I have heard rumor. I haven't heard any recent rumors, but you know, Whit Babcock was the athletic director at Cincinnati, before coming to Virginia Tech, and he's got ties there. And there were at least, you know, we don't know how credible these are, but I have heard from more than one person that Fickell was interested in Virginia Tech. Haven't heard that in 2021, but in 2020 we heard Fickell was interested, including from some pretty credible folks. So, boy, oh boy! But I'm not allowing myself to kind of get sucked into the Fickell's coming, so I get disappointed because I do think it's pretty unlikely.
I think it's incredibly unlikely that he comes to Virginia Tech, and I think you've made a good assessment there. Are there any assistants out there, Dan, that you think might be that Whit Babcock might call?
The assistant I like is Mike Elko, and I'll admit I haven't done full research on him, but he coached, I believe, at Richmond. He's got Virginia tie. He's not from Virginia, but he's coached in Virginia and in the sort of mid-Atlantic Southeast. He might have coached at North Carolina school or maybe it was South Carolina Fordham. And he's now Texas A&M defensive coordinator, and I think he's a stud. He's well-known as a very good recruiter. Their defense, if you look, I think they just shut out Shane Beamer in South Carolina last week. They had a great defense last year. I'm really interested in him. Jeff Grimes out at BYU. He's the offensive coordinator at BYU, and he was the former Virginia Tech offensive line coach. I think he deserves a look. BYU's had a fantastic offense under Grimes. And he's a guy who's at least, coached and very familiar with the territory. There's Charles Huff, who's now the head coach at Marshall, but has, you know, NFL experience, SEC experience. He's from the 757. Those would be kind of the ones. Marcus Freeman gets attention. I'm afraid it's too risky. He was Luke Fickell's defensive coordinator at Cincinnati, and he's now at Notre Dame, only been there 1 year. He's clearly considered an up-and-comer, exciting guy, but I'm nervous about. I think we have to go after the getting burned by Fuente a little bit on someone with limited experience. I'm kind of hoping for someone. I don't know that necessarily need to have a lot of head coach experience, but I'd like to see a pretty thick resume in terms of success in multiple locations for multiple years. So that's why Tom Herman, frankly, is very attractive. You know, there's another guy, by the way. I'll give you one more. Dan Lanning. I don't know if you know Dan Lanning. He's the Georgia defensive coordinator. He's 36 years old, although he's putting together what might end up being, you know, the 86 Bears of college football defenses, right? This Georgia defense this year is just unbelievable. Now they're doing it with 4 stars and 5 stars. But he's a guy who people are talking about for head coach. I don't think I want him at Virginia Tech just because he's 36 years old and, and hasn't the proven track record that I think that we're going to need.
Okay, I'm going to ask you a follow-up here, Dan. What about the Charlotte football coach?
Jimmy Chadwell. He's clearly a very good coach, but I got a little – and I think he's probably going to be successful and someone's going to take a chance on him. But I get Fuente echoes, right? You know, Fuente had two or three good years at Memphis, became the hot G5 hire, but hadn't that long resume and network that he could come in and bring a staff with him of proven folks. And Chadwell raises similar concerns, where he's had great success at Coastal, but has he – really built that, you know, one of the things that I've sort of learned just from reading other, you know, meshes board experts and following on this is it's not just the head coach is the, you know, in control of things, but they have to build a competent staff from the coordinators on down. And it's a lot easier to do that when you've built your coaching tree and network, right? And if someone's coming up and they're a little bit younger and they've just been in a G5 school, they don't have that Power 5 network that a lot of other coaches have. So that makes me a little nervous about Chadwell. He's I don't want to go that risky.
No, I hear you. Chadwell's at Coastal Carolina. Will Healy is over at Charlotte, but I assume that you think the same thing about Will Healy as well.
Hello?
You there? Sir, can you hear me?
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah. Hey, Dan. Can you hear us?
We can hear you, Dan. Oop. Dan? Dan, are you there? We can hear you, Dan. I think.
Hello?
Yeah, we still got him in the queue here.
We still got you in the queue.
He may have gotten disconnected.
Hey, Dan, we still got you in the queue. We'll wait a couple seconds. Can you hear us?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Okay. Yes, we can hear you. We can hear you. We're here. We assume that you were, you mentioned Chadwell, and he's over at Coastal Carolina. He's over at Coastal Carolina. I assume that you have the same concerns about Will Healy from Charlotte. Is that
good? Yes. And even more so because Will Healy hasn't been winning as much as Chadwell.
No, I get it. You know, because it was a hard place for him to, you know, some people had said that, okay, so he went into Austin Peay, then he went into Charlotte and was winning for, you know, got him to a bowl game and all that stuff, but, you know, done pretty well with Young, and I'd seen some people cheering for him, you know, on Twitter and that sort of thing. So, but I get your take on all of that. So that's, you've given us a pretty good rundown on people that you think would fit well at Tech, and we really appreciate it. We appreciate the comprehensive answer that you gave us to the open microphone. So we're in really good shape there. I mean, I think a lot of Hokies will be happy. Happy hearing this tonight. Now, man, it is time for open microphone number two. We rarely get two segments on this show. What do you got for us, Dan?
I'll zoom out and the thing on my mind as I'm watching this year, of course, I love college football, is it's a down year nationally, and there's, you know, you got kind of a mess coming in with the playoff where everyone's getting tired of seeing the same three or four teams every year. And it looks like we're heading that way again, right? We're going to be heading with Alabama, Georgia, potentially Ohio State, Oklahoma. So that's not good for the sport. You've got a Heisman race that's a mess, and you just kind of have sloppy play, not a lot of stars everywhere. So unfortunately, it's kind of a down year. I'm sure everything's going to be fine over the long term, but the ACC is reflective of that in that it's probably the worst football year for the ACC that I can remember. And I'd have to, you know, go back, but I'd say the last decade or so, right, where when you have Clemson down, we know Clemson's been sort of lifting the rest of the league up while Florida State has sunk. And then we see North Carolina kind of coming up to help the league. But now with Clemson down this year, and we're looking at Pitt and Wake Forest as our possible championship game, it's not a great look for the league. I hope for potential coaching candidates, they see that as a, well, shoot, all I need to do to come in and win that Coastal is, you know, get around teams like the aging Mac Brown and beat Pitt, which is, if you look at all your divisions across college football, that's very doable. But the perception of the league has certainly suffered greatly this year, and I think the sport nationally too.
Very good take. Very, very good.
Yeah, you know, just a couple thoughts on Fuente, and you guys have covered it so well. But, you know, from the outside, looking in as a Clemson, Georgia Tech guy, the one only thing I'll add is, I mean, it looked like such a good hire at the time. And I don't remember a person who didn't think that this was going to be a success in Blacksburg. And it just didn't work out. I don't think there's any question now that Fuente's days are numbered. But when he got there, I had visions of those, you know, mid-2000 type Virginia Tech teams that were so incredible on defense and dominated the ACC for a number of years. And it, you know, I thought he had the potential to go on those kind of runs, you know, not quite dominate the ACC because of Clemson and in the league, but I thought they were going to be very good. And it just, in a way, started 19 wins in the first 2 years, and it just didn't work out. For me, my open mic topic, and I got a little airing of grievances here with Clemson. With Georgia Tech, I pretty much expected what exactly happened at Virginia. They're just not equipped to handle a team like that right now that is that good offensively. I think Jeff Sims continues to improve as a quarterback, still has a tendency to make the really poor turnover in the red zone, but those are becoming fewer and fewer. I do think at some point Jeff Collins is going to have to make some staff changes. I've seen enough from the offense that I think you can continue in the direction you're going. But on the defense, I mean, they've just had a couple of humiliating performances against Pitt and Virginia. And I know they're great on offense, but this defense has just gotten shredded to pieces a couple of times this year, and has not improved during his tenure. I would like to see some staff changes with Thacker as a defensive coordinator on that side of the ball, and with Clemson, you know, Dan, you know, nailed it. They were pretty disappointing against Pitt. I expected them to lose to Pitt, but really, because I think Pitt's just better right now, and the thing is with Clemson, it didn't have to be this bad. Yeah. It didn't work out that you're going to compete for a national championship every year. And even with the injuries on defense, you're still very good on that side of the ball. But there's just such a multitude of issues going on with the offense that you can't pinpoint one thing. You know, when DJ Uiagalelei makes a good throw, it gets dropped. When he has a receiver open, he misses them. When the running game gets going, Tony Elliott will start calling passing plays. And I really think what they need to do, and they're not going to be a great offense. It's just not going to happen this year, but they have shown some ability to run the ball. And you got to go with that, because you can't go with DJ's arm anymore. He's just not there. His part of it's mental. I think he's gets rattled in the pocket very easy. His receivers are struggling. But you could have a little bit of a running game, and that's what happened in the Pitt game. When they had a little positive momentum running the ball, they were still going for this 50-50 run-pass ratio, and that's just not the way they're going to be able to have a chance this year. They really got to run the ball about 75% of the time, or until another team proves they can stop it. The offensive line is starting to play a little bit better, especially run blocking, but I really feel like that's the direction they got to go for this year. You got to take it out of his arms. You got to put less pressure on the passing game and try to run the ball. And, you know, you're not going to be a great offense. You're not going to put up 40 points a game or anything like that. But if you can at least start to score a couple games in the 20s, you still have a chance to win 8 or 9 games. So just issues across the board everywhere on that Clemson offense. And my final kind of rant on this, Dabo Swinney, you've got to embrace the transfer portal. I mean, really embrace it, not just kind of coach speak it. You're losing every time you lose 2 or 3 players, you're having to give that scholarship to a walk-on or a lower level player. And, you know, Georgia and Alabama are picking up transfers from LSU, Ohio State, all SEC type players. And Clemson can get, you know, talented players through the transfer portal. That's something he has to embrace over the next couple of years.
Outstanding comments there, Jeff. Outstanding comments. Well, Dan and Jeff, I'm going to read through something here. Mine isn't going to be a rant. It's actually going to be some pretty decent praise. I just recently got the Blue Ribbon college basketball preview. I'm sure you guys have heard of that. And I went through it. And Dan, I know you'll be really impressed with this. Keeve Aluma is listed as a third team All-American, the ACC Player of the Year, and first team All-ACC. They predict Virginia Tech is the fourth best team in the ACC. This is, again, all for 2021. And Virginia Tech is listed as the ACC's second best front court. Front court. I want to make sure I repeat that. The ACC's second best front court. That means that they're saying that the ACC, out of the ACC's big men, the rotation that comes through the Hokies roster is the second best in the ACC. Give us your thoughts on that, Dan, because I haven't heard that in a long time in Blacksburg.
Well, look, it's exciting. And we, not only do they have a good front court, they've got good shooters. And, you know, last year, one of the things that held them back, Keve Alumas looks like he's improved every year and can really, I mean, third team All-Americans. I mean, that's high praise, obviously. And he flirted with the NBA. But what held them back last year, you know, Wabisa Beatty, the point guard, was never a shooting threat. And that allowed defenses to cheat and basically leave him wide open and pack down on Aluma. And so, you know, Storm Murphy now coming in, Aline out at shooting guard, Hunter Couture shooting guard. They have a chance now with the outside shooting, I think, to make the front court even better, because they're not going to be able to cheat in. So there's an awful lot of excitement. I don't know as much about some of the other new faces that are going to come in and provide depth. But that starting five is really exciting. And, you know, I think fourth in the ACC seems about right. We know that the ACC is just going to be absolutely loaded with talent, as it always is. But Mike Young is going to have 5 team guys. These guys aren't the one and doneers that are, you know, going to go out there and just showcase their own individual skills and then move on to the NBA. He has these 5 playing team ball, and that can make up for a lot of overcome, I guess, you know, the blue chip athletes that they'll be going up against. So very exciting.
Doesn't have a whole lot of bodies coming in for 2021, but the bodies coming in for 2022. And I had to continue this into my open microphone segment. Rodney Rice, the Matha Catholic, coming to Virginia Tech. He's one of the best combo guards in the country that's coming to play at Virginia Tech next year, 2022. You there? We can hear you. We see you. Patrick Wessler coming in. We can hear you. We can hear you, bro. Patrick Wessler coming in 7-foot center next year. 255 pounds, and MJ Collins, another combo guard, coming in. So, I mean, we're sitting. I mean, Mike Young appears to be building a program. He's using the transfer portal effectively, and he hired a coach from DeMatha and Mike Jones, who's able to work some of his connections to bring players in. So
I had to say it about a little bit about it. I'm excited about the 2022 class coming in. It's ranked sixth in the ACC, which tells you how deep the ACC is, but it's ranked 22 nationally. So, I mean, we have a lot of things to be thankful for on the basketball side. It would be nice, you know, if our next coach, you know, Mike Young's showing that he can bring in basketball players to Virginia Tech and highly ranked players. And we, you know, the environment is there for football in Blacksburg, and to bring in some really good football players there. Do you agree, Dan?
Yeah, I do. And I agree completely with everything you're saying about Mike Young's sort of vision for the program. He's developing them. He's also recruiting well. The facilities, the athletic facilities generally have been improved with the nutrition facilities, et cetera, the dorms for the athletes. So we get the hire right. You can have a long-term improvement. You know, the funding, our friend was Mehul Sangani, if I pronounce that name right? He's an important member of the Virginia Tech Board of Visitors that happens to be a huge sports fan. And we get clues that it sounds like the fundraising, we have the Drive for 25, et cetera, you know, where they're trying to get more alumni, a higher percentage of alumni to donate, and then eventually get them to donate larger amounts. It's coming along slowly, but it's coming in the right direction. So I think, again, there's a lot to be optimistic about. This decision that Whit Babcock's going to make in December, maybe sooner, but probably December, on the hire is going to be one of the most important, you know, the kind of decision that we'll look back on 10, 20, 30 years from now, right, and still be talking about as you think about the arc of athletic. Sorry to bring it back to football there, but
no, it's okay. It's okay. It is. No, you – dude, you're bringing up the right thing, Dan, because you can, you know, ADs are pretty much allowed one strike if they've done pretty well overall as the athletic director. And I mean, I think we can agree on this. Whit Babcock has done a pretty good overall job across the board for most of the athletics at Virginia Tech. I mean, he even decided to keep the soccer coach after 4 years of losing seasons when I thought that soccer coach was going to be out the door, and look where men's soccer is now, right? So if you're taking a broad approach and a broad overview and grading somebody about their management of the athletic programs at Virginia Tech, Whit Babcock has done a pretty good job, and a lot of ADs will, you know, they'll get a pass on the first one, but they can't mess up. They can't mess up the second one, and I think that's what you're saying.
That's exactly right. Yep. Mm-hmm. No, he has done a good job on the non-revenue sports. There's no question.
Well, and I would argue that, you know, men's basketball, he's done men's and women's basketball, you know, the top other two sports. He's done a good job there too. I mean, we've had some very successful coaching runs there as well. So, I mean, if, you know, he'll have to get this next football hire right. And I think, you know, I think we're at a point in Hokie Nation where there aren't, you know, there are most of Hokie Nation right now after this point. I mean, we're here at year six. Most of Hokie Nation is at the point of thinking, yeah, it's time for a change. And you're not seeing as much. You see a few hardcore supporters that maybe don't want to see a change, but most people are at that point where they want to see a change. So, Dan, thank you so much for coming on the All Sports Discussion ACC podcast. We appreciated you a lot coming on this show. We appreciate you experimenting with the audio with us on the fly as we try to learn this new podcast software. And we always love having you come on the show because you provide a wealth of knowledge. And it's always fun to have you come on the show. And we want to have you come on during basketball season for sure, because we know it's going to be fun. It's going to be a fun time.
Right. It's nice to have some positive conversation instead of all the negativity. So, well, I appreciate you having me on. It's always fun to chat and kind of go around the horn. So we think about it all the time. We live for it. So it's good to talk with others that are the same.
Very good. Have a great week, guys.
See ya. You guys have a good one.